All right, y'all, welcome to the show. I got a big-ass show for you today. So we're going to talk in a second about updates coming out of Israel. They bombed Rafah. We'll get to attacks in the West Bank now as well. Iraq got bombed by Israel, so they're just going, they're going all out. And by the way, at this late date in the conflict, it's not getting nearly as much coverage as it should get. Now, Israeli attacks are greeted mostly with a yawn in Western media. But that doesn't mean it's not happening, and that doesn't mean that you don't have innocent victims getting murked on a daily basis. So we'll dive into that. I'll also get to Columbia University erupting in pro-Palestine protests, and of course those protesters are getting viciously smeared. Later on, we have Tucker versus Joe Rogan. That got interesting. Tucker denies evolution to Rogan's face, something that really perplexes Rogan. Tucker also talks about supernatural entities. I don't know if he's talking about ghosts or aliens or a mix or whatever, but super weird. So I have a bunch of clips from that. Then we'll also get to Congress spending the weekend passing the most disgusting bills you've ever seen. Trump allegedly can't stop farting in the courtroom. We'll get to the guy who set himself on fire and self-immolated outside of the Trump trial. And of course, Bill Maher cannot stop turning into a Republican every single day. It is getting worse. I will prove it. Okay. So everybody do me a big favor. Subscribe to the channel. It helps out massively in the algorithm. It costs you nothing at all. So hook a brother up with a sub. I would deeply, deeply appreciate it. And by the way, thank you to everybody who supports this channel on Patreon or tips on YouTube. We can't do it without you. I've never talked to an advertiser. I'm very proud of that fact. You guys make that possible. So thank you very much. And if you are not a Patreon supporter, please consider a link below. All right, let's go ahead and dive into it here. So guys, right off the bat, the thing that we desperately did not want to happen just happened. The IDF was striking the southern Gaza city of Rafah, killing at least 22, mostly children. Now, this is at the same time that the U.S. is sending more money and weapons to Israel. More on that later. I'll give you specifics about all the terrible bills that Congress passed over the weekend. But guys, understand something. Rafah is the last place in Gaza that was considered somewhat safe, relatively safe. North Gaza is destroyed, basically wiped off the map. You had a million Palestinians shoved into Rafah, which is honestly a tiny space. It was compared to like the size of LAX airport. You had a million people in there just hoping, praying that Israel is not going to bomb them. Israel is not going to kill them. All the civilians are there. Well, Israel just decided to do some bombing there. Now, by the way, will they continue? Maybe. Will they do a ground invasion? Maybe. We don't know. But remember, the reporting over the weekend was like, oh, Biden made a deal with Netanyahu. I will let you do a Rafah invasion, but only if you don't do a retaliatory strike against Iran. This was the reporting. Well, what happened since then? Netanyahu both attacked Iran and started bombing Rafah. So either that reporting is fake, or Biden just got played by Netanyahu again. Absolutely pathetic. So we'll see what happens there in the next few days. But, you know, hope for the best, but fear the worst, because every step of the way, Israel has been far worse than any of us could imagine with how vicious they are towards innocent civilians, women, children. All right, now, at the same time, we got to talk about this. There's now a massive crackdown happening in the West Bank. So, by the way, this is how you know that the argument from the IDF, who, us? No, we're just defending ourselves against Hamas. We're just going after the bad guys that attacked us on October 7th. This is how you know that's bullshit. Because there's been a massive uptick in violence by Israelis against Palestinians in the West Bank, where there is no Hamas. So here's a video. They're absolutely destroying innocent villages. Watch this. Worst destruction in decades in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli military went into Nur Shams refugee camp east of Tulkarim late Thursday night, and on early Friday morning, they were still there. And in 12 hours of raids, they destroyed roads, buildings, shops, houses, tore up sewage lines. We've been to this camp, we've seen these roads before, we've seen this kind of destruction before. And those alleyways, those roads that we're seeing in the videos now, were repaired mere months ago. But locals...
So the IDF destroyed these Palestinian villages not that long ago, and then as soon as the work was completed to fix the roads that they tore up and the other issues they had, the IDF goes in there again and destroys everything.
The mayhem has been carried out on Thursday night into Friday morning by the Israeli military as the worst destruction of infrastructure that they've seen in the West Bank since the destruction of the Jenin refugee camp during the Second Intifada in the early 2000s. Now, the area of Tul Karim is no stranger to these kinds of raids, but what residents are saying, the opinion that now locals are voicing is the same thing we've been hearing since the beginning of the war on Gaza. They are worried that this escalation in intensity is a signal that once the Israeli military is done with Gaza, that the West Bank will be next.
Guys, they tore up sewage lines. They tore up sewage lines. In what world can you conceivably make an argument, we had to tear up the sewage lines for the civilians in the West Bank because Hamas? That's not a thing. That's not an argument. They are simply targeting innocent civilians on purpose. And again, at this late date, if you don't see it, I have to question your intelligence or your honesty. You pick which one. All right, so we also have this. There are some reports that there were multiple strikes targeting Iranian-backed militias and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps in Iraq. There are 8 dead as a result of it. Now, remember, guys, there was reporting the same day that Israel attacked Iran, there was reporting, hey, they also attacked in Syria and in Iraq. It turns out the reports on that day of attacks in Syria and Iraq were untrue. But they have since done at least one strike in Iraq going after top Shia proxies of Iran. So yet again, totally unhinged. They want a broader war. Netanyahu has always wanted that. All right, so another thing. We now have new evidence, new video, new pictures of a brand new mass grave outside of Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. At least 150 bodies have been found in the past 2 days. So by the way, there's all this talk about, oh, I think that the death count is overblown by the Gaza Health Ministry because they're run by Hamas. Now, in previous conflicts, the Gaza Health Ministry has been relatively accurate with their numbers. So that notion is sort of bullshit when you question it. But if you're going to question in any direction, it's not that they're overcounting. If anything, it's that they're undercounting. There's only one outlet I know of that counts among the dead people who've been under the rubble for weeks. Okay, that's Euromed Monitor. But there's also, now we're coming across new mass graves that nobody knew about. How many of these are there? How many of these are there? That's a super important question. And I don't think one that anybody has an answer to. But the answer is certainly not just one. So the death toll may be way higher than even the highest estimate. Imran Siddiqui says here, I've never seen the uncovering of mass graves being taken so lightly by the Western media. Students feel unsafe, though. More on that in a minute, because that's a reference to the Columbia University protests and the vicious reaction and the smearing of the protesters by the media and by a bunch of bad faith actors. Yeah, this is kind of a bigger story. A new mass grave uncovered in Gaza and absolute crickets. It's almost like people have gotten accustomed to Israeli brutality and viciousness and genocide. They've gotten accustomed to it. So when there's a new mass grave found, it barely is a blip in the radar. That's insane. We have to recalibrate our moral outrage meter because right now it is beyond broken. All right. So a little bit of good news to sprinkle in amidst all this horrible news. Apparently Netanyahu's office had emergency talks because they are fearing that the International Criminal Court is going to issue arrest warrants, not just for Netanyahu, but a bunch of other ministers who are directly involved in the genocide. So apparently they are actually worried that, you know, the International Court is going to be like, hey, you're such a criminal and it's so extreme and you're doing so many war crimes and this is so unhinged that we are going to legitimately try to lock your ass up. Well, I know it's cold comfort, but fact of the matter is at least homie's not going to bed and sleeping like a baby. At least he's actually worried, like, damn, there might be some consequences for my insane actions. All right, so now let me give you this one. This guy, Barak Ravid, who's a reporter for Axios, his whole job throughout this whole conflict has been to try to make it look like Joe Biden is being tougher on Netanyahu and Israel than he actually is. I say that because this is the guy who was the source of so many of the stories that are like, Biden's really angry. Biden called Netanyahu an asshole behind the scenes. Biden says, hey, can you please reduce the war crimes just a little bit? This is the guy who leaks all of those stories. That's really just PR ass covering by the White House, but he's the guy who's feeding that narrative. Well, now we get this from him. Scoop, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is expected to announce within days sanctions against the IDF forces Netzah Yehuda battalion for human rights violations in the occupied West Bank. So this is one of the most extreme, one of the most criminal branches of the IDF. And he's saying that the U.S. is going to sanction this group. Now, by the way, don't hold your breath for this, because Biden also sanctioned some of the worst, most extreme illegal Israeli settlers. I forget how many. It was like 2 or 5 or something like that. But then within like a month or two, he rolled back all those sanctions. So again, it was just a little virtue signal move. I'm against the extremists in Israel. See, I sanctioned the worst illegal settlers. But then he rolled it back when nobody was looking. So it might be a similar thing in this instance. He might do the sanctions and roll them back later, or do the sanctions, but they're just sort of sanctions in name only. They're weak. They don't get anything accomplished. But either way, I mean, the overwhelmingly obvious takeaway is I doubt this is going to have any teeth. It's more for show. Biden knows he has a problem with his own voters who don't approve of his support of Israel. And so this is the way that he tries to split the difference and be like, I'm with Israel, but also I don't like the extreme stuff coming out of there. All right, more. So Senator Bill Hagerty responded to that story I just told you about the IDF unit, which might get sanctioned, as Israel fights on multiple fronts against terrorists and a terror-supporting state that openly vows to destroy it. The Biden administration is sanctioning the IDF to appease the pro-Hamas radical left. Absolutely shameful. This guy's a moron. As Zed Jelani says, here a U.S. senator says that an Israeli unit that was found to be torturing elderly people to death should continue to receive U.S. taxpayer aid and American weapons. Where was he radicalized? What university did he attend? So here you just have an outright defense of an Israeli unit that it has been proven they've tortured elderly people to death. And he's like, how dare you? If you criticize them, if you sanction them, if you cut off their money, you're Hamas. It's beyond comical. I told you guys, what this conflict has taught me is you don't have to look too deep beneath the surface to find that plenty of people who have a tremendous amount of political power are like, I'm a Nazi. I believe Nazi things. I mean, it is right there underneath the surface. It's a millimeter underneath. And they're all exposing themselves with what Israel is doing. Okay, more. The Israeli army employs a new tactic, using recorded sounds of crying infants and women screaming to lure civilians and kill them. This is what Euromed Monitor documented in Nusayrat refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip. Does it get any darker than that? This is like when we learned recently of the Daddy's Home program, where the IDF would wait for a Hamas official to go home and knowing, hey, the wife is there. Hey, 4 children are there with them. Knowing that fact, they would blow them up when they were at home, purposely killing the woman and the 4 children along with the alleged Hamas fighter. This is as depraved as it gets. Guys, bottom line, they don't view Palestinian civilians as civilians. They don't view them as innocent. I know, because that's what they said. That's what they said how they feel is. Are we just going to sit here and let it happen? Are we just going to keep arming it and funding it and supporting it? Apparently the answer is yes. Itamar Ben-Gvir, Israel's far-right national security minister, whom Netanyahu depends on to stay in power and avoid prison on corruption charges, has called for the execution of Palestinian prisoners to ease overcrowding in the country's jails. Guys, there are thousands of Palestinian, they call them prisoners, they're hostages. They're hostages. There's no formal charges against these people. They're hostages. He says, yeah, let's execute thousands of Palestinians on a whim because our jails are overcrowded. Again, outright genocidal. Total Nazi shit. By the way, the exact number of hostages held by Israel, 3,890. That's how many Ben-Gvir wants to kill. So by the way, these are the numbers we have. Again, this came out on April 3rd, so the number is definitely higher now. But I'm sure EuroMed Monitor is stretched super thin. They don't have the infrastructure, barely have the ability to keep track of this stuff. But at least as of April 3rd, 41,496 Palestinians had been killed. Of those, 37,676 are civilians. Over 15,000 children, over 9,000 women, over 77,000 injured people, 136 journalists killed. That's the most deadly conflict for journalists ever. 2 million out of the 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza are now homeless. There's been over 122,000 homes completely destroyed, over 269,000 homes that are partially destroyed that you still can't live in, 443 schools that have been attacked, 301 healthcare facilities. The list goes on and on. It's disgusting. Now, I give you all of that to give you this. Benjamin Netanyahu is now stronger than ever since October 7th, according to new polls from Israel. The survey also highlights a tightening race for the prime minister, with Benny Gantz, who received 42% of the support, compared to Benjamin Netanyahu's 37. So he's losing to Benny Gantz, but he's the highest that he's been since October 7th. In two recent surveys, the Likud party and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu have received the highest levels of support since the October 7th massacre. In the first war conducted by Mariv, the Likud party has reached a new high since the onset of the conflict, marking significant gains in public support. The poll, spearheaded by Lazar Research in collaboration with Panel for All, indicates that Likud now holds 21 seats, a peak since the Swords of Iron War began on October 7th. Is that what they call this thing? Swords of Iron? This surge came amidst ongoing tensions and the recent thwarting of an Iranian attack. The survey also highlights a tightening race for the prime minister, with Benny Gantz receiving 42% of the support compared with Benjamin Netanyahu's 37%. The gap between the two has significantly narrowed, with Gantz's lead shrinking from 12% to just over 5% over the last week. According to the Mariv survey, the National Union Party leads with 31 seats, while the dramatic shifts in public opinion reflect the volatile political landscape in Israel during this tumultuous period. The survey included 500 respondents. Okay, blah, blah, blah. So, best position that he's been in since October 7th. He has gone back up in the polls since October 7th, and if elections were held today, it would actually be a close race between him and Benny Gantz. Look, this, I'm sorry, but this falls directly in line with that other poll that came out in the wake of, I don't know, maybe it was like a month since October 7th, and Israel was already effectively trying to wipe Gaza off the map, and or maybe it was like 2 or 3 months in. Anyway, the poll said it was only something like 4% of Israelis thought the IDF was using too much force in Gaza. So already at a time where we had thousands of dead kids, thousands of dead women, thousands of innocent civilians killed, already at a time when infrastructure was clearly being targeted, already at a time when they announced the medieval siege to cut off food, fuel, water, and electricity to 2.3 million people, the Israeli population was like, yeah, that's fine. That's not too much. I'm cool with that. So, understand, they are in the midst of an absolute psychotic break. They are in a state of hysteria and mania. It's not dissimilar from what the U.S. was like after 9/11, where, you know, George W. Bush had like an 80% or 90% approval rating as they were plotting an all-out war on a country that didn't attack us and lying about it in the process. I mean, there is a war fever that has swept the country. And so now they're not too upset with Netanyahu. Think about all the war crimes, all the genocide, all the ethnic cleansing, all the torture, every horrible policy imaginable. And he's still hanging in there in a potential race. By the way, that's not to say Benny Gantz would be better. He's also an absolute fucking psychopath. There is really no left option in Israel. That should be obvious to you guys by this point. But the fact that the population feels about him the way they do, man, is that telling. Okay. Look at this, guys. Quote, We should have seen a lot more revenge, a lot more rivers of Gazan's blood, expressed Israeli journalist Yehuda Schlesinger during an Israeli channel interview. Schlesinger was triggered upon seeing Palestinians at the beach in Gaza calling for more Palestinians to be annihilated as there are no innocents in the strip. So yet again, the kind of genocidal language that we hear every day in Israel from politicians, from media figures, and from the population. And Zedulani here says, Israeli government arrested an Arab citizen and professor who opposed the war, saying she was engaged in incitement. As you can see, those incitement laws don't seem to apply to Israeli Jews. So you could be as genocidal as you want to be. You could openly call for killing civilians, women, children, etc. And you're not violating the incitement laws. It's okay if you incite against Palestinians. But if you oppose the war, then, oh no, you're inciting. And you're like being traitorous. And you're undermining national security or whatever, and they arrest you. No free speech, total authoritarianism, but again, it only cuts in one direction. The freedom only cuts in one direction. You have freedom to be as vicious and genocidal as you want to be, as long as you're talking about the Palestinians. Okay. New CBS YouGov poll about sending more weapons and supplies to Israel. So, 40% support it, sending more weapons to Israel. 60% oppose it. So it's 20 points underwater. Among Democrats, only 32% support sending more money and weapons to Israel. Among independents, only 38% support sending more money and weapons to Israel. Republicans, that's the only group that's above water, 55% support sending money and weapons to Israel. Now, again, we'll do a separate segment on this in a little bit, but the House had a vote on another package to send billions of dollars in weapons and aid to Israel. And what was the result? And this is among Democrats. 82% of Democrats voted in favor of sending the money and weapons to Israel. 82%. And that's to say nothing of the Republicans, which I think it's every Republican but Massey voted in favor of it. Completely and utterly abdicating their duty to their constituents, not representing the will of the people at all. By the way, gee, I wonder why. I wonder why that is. Could it be partly ideological? Sure. In part, it can be, sure. But another giant part of it is AIPAC and DMFI and the Israel lobby and the millions and millions of dollars they spend in campaign contributions, which buys loyalty from these politicians. When Ilhan Omar said, it's all about the Benjamins, talking about AIPAC, she was 100% right. She's talking about the power of money and lobbyists in Washington, D.C. She's not saying anything anti-Semitic and blaming all Jews. She's saying the Israel lobby is strong and powerful for the same reason the Saudi lobby is strong and powerful. They buy support. They buy votes in a particular direction when they spend millions in campaign contributions. You know, Wall Street, there's a big financial lobby. Why do you think our government always votes for more deregulation, always votes for more bailouts for these companies? It's because they have effectively bought the politicians. It's the same with AIPAC. Who are we kidding? This story was wild. Google CEO tells staffers the office is not a place to debate politics after firing 28 for anti-Israel sit-ins. So you had some employees at Google sit in their boss's office to say, hey, we don't want to be involved with any sort of technology that help enforces apartheid and commits genocide, right? We don't want to help Israel in any way, shape, or form in this scenario because we feel like it's immoral. By the way, hilarious. Wasn't Google's like catchphrase thing, don't be evil or something like that? And now they're like, evil, yes. They should change it to evil, hooray. So what happened? Everybody who expressed concern about technology that they're developing that could help Israel commit crimes, they were fired. They fired 28. You want to talk about cancel culture? You can't even voice disapproval about this? Seems like something perfectly reasonable to be upset about, isn't it? Here's your cancel culture. Here's your crackdown on free speech and free expression. All right, now let's talk about the Columbia thing, man. So this is a big deal. You had these massive pro-Palestine protests in Colombia. And man, did it trigger the higher-ups, people at the top of Columbia University. They were furious about it. They wanted the NYPD to come in and start arresting people. Now, by the way, this is a classic example of free speech and free expression. They have a right to protest, especially something as serious as what's happening in Gaza. Well, no. According to the higher-ups at the university, this is unacceptable. So they wanted the NYPD to go in there and start laying down the law. And that's exactly what happened. The NYPD came in. They arrested a bunch of students in the overwhelming majority of instances for total bullshit. You know, they really had no right to arrest them, but they did arrest them. And then guess what? The next day, even more students showed up. They said, oh, hell no. Fuck this. It's really reminiscent of the old school anti-Vietnam War protests, right? That's what it feels like. It feels very, very similar to that. So let me show you a little video about what's been going down, and then I'll give you some more about how these people are getting smeared to the high heavens. Here we go. Oh, yeah, I forgot to point this out, too, that the university suspended the daughter of Representative Ilhan Omar. She's one of the leading organizers of what they're doing, of what the protesters are doing. And they suspended her. And by the way, they also suspended her like a day after Ilhan Omar was aggressively questioning. I don't know if it was the head of Columbia University in particular. It may have been the head of Columbia University specifically, aggressively questioning how censorious and authoritarian they've been. So they're saying it's for those of you who are just listening to this and you can't see what's on the screen. They're basically comparing this to how it was inspired by the anti-Vietnam War protests. Oh, and that's one of their demands right there. 1,000 students occupied 5 buildings demanding the school cut ties with a Pentagon war research think tank. Oh, that was for the 1968 protest, I believe it was. Over 100 students set up an encampment on a university lawn on April 17th. They called it the Liberated Zone and Gaza's Solidarity Encampment. Working in the pre-dawn hours to avoid campus security. Their numbers grew throughout the day. Administrators responded by closing the campus to the public and calling the NYPD. By the way, that is a bitch-ass move. This is a peaceful protest. Why are you closing the campus? Why are you calling the NYPD? It's almost like you're more offended by the disorder than the genocide that they're protesting. It's almost like you might not agree with the core of why they're protesting. Activists say hundreds of supporters arrived within 20 minutes after rumors of imminent mass arrests. The following morning, police arrested students on a sidewalk in front of the university. A few hours later, the NYPD swept the encampment.
The president of Columbia just sent an email saying that she gave NYPD the authority to come in. We saw police and riot gear coming in with like batons and zip ties.
Where are all the free speech warriors? Where are you? Ben Shapiro, Dave Rubin, whoever else postured as a First Amendment warrior? Where the hell are you? Oh, that's right, you're silent. And you're going to remain silent because these students are protesting Israel and you love Israel. So again, please spare me all of the virtue signaling and posturing and the we are the last bastions of freedom of speech. Yes! Apparently not. Apparently not, because you got dick to say about this.
You are currently participating in an
police arrested at least 100 people. Now get this, guys. Columbia, previously suspended chapters of Jewish Voice for Peace and Students for Justice in Palestine. They suspended those chapters. By the way, if we want to play the same game they play, why are you being anti-Semitic? You are censoring and doing an authoritarian crackdown on Jewish Voice for Peace. You're telling Jewish students they can't have free speech and free expression to have disapproval over what Israel is doing in Gaza. Why are you guys so anti-Semitic? Several colleges around the world have voted to cut ties with Israel in recent months. By the way, they also want Columbia to do that. And now they go on to just to explain what's going on in Gaza, which we all know in detail, unfortunately. But in response to this, I mean, okay, there's more talk about this than there is about the new mass grave that was just found in Gaza with 150 innocent people in it. There's more talk about this than Israel bombing Rafah and killing 22 people, most of them children. There's more talk about this than Israel bombing Iraq. There's more talk about this than any of the updates that we're getting from Israel, including the new crackdown in the West Bank, where they're bulldozing an innocent village and ripping up the roads and destroying the sewer lines. There's more talk about this, and you'll never guess what side the media is on and what side the higher-ups are on. You'll never guess. There's this guy, Shay Davide, who's been going around basically accusing the protesters of all being Hamas supporters and wanting more October 7ths. He's now calling Columbia University because they're not doing a full and complete crackdown on the protests. He's calling them basically Hamas supporters and terrorists. Out-and-out smear campaign. Out-and-out smear campaign against students who are protesting for peace. So here's another example of what's going on here. This is, Jake Tapper says this. In response to horrific scenes of anti-Semitic harassment at and around campus, the Orthodox rabbi at Columbia and Barnard sent a WhatsApp message to more than 290-plus Jewish students this morning, recommending that they go home until it's safe again for them on campus. By the way, it is Jewish Voice for Peace. It is anti-Zionist Jews who are the ones being censored, who are the ones facing an authoritarian crackdown, who are the ones who were arrested and part of the sweep of the encampment. It's anti-Zionist Jews. It is pro-Palestine Jews who are facing. They have nothing to say about them. Instead, what do? Cook up imaginary scenarios about how it's unsafe for Zionist Jews on campus. Do they have one example of an anti-Semitic incident? They do not. What they'll do is what they always do, point to, oh my God, these people were saying, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And I am interpreting that as a call for genocide, even though it's not. Hamas uses the same phrase, even though when they say it, they mean it in a totally different way. It's anti-Semitic enough, pro-terrorist enough. So this is anti-Semitism. The guy, Shay Davide, had a video of, like, here Israel supporters are being chased off campus or something. And you watch the video, it is totally unclear what's happening in the video. Totally unclear what's happening in the video. The idea that that's some, like, pound the gavel moment, the only thing they could point to and even make a stretch of a case that it's fucked up is that there's a bunch of pro-Israel students, Zionist students, waving Israeli flags, and then you have somebody who shows up holding a sign saying, like, Al-Qassam's, that's the military wing of Hamas. Basically, like, Hamas's next target, and it's got an arrow pointing at them. And they look at, oh my God, they're calling in an attack directly from Hamas! In reality, what is it? It's a joke, right? This person doesn't have frickin' Hamas connections. But if you want to say, hey, that goes too far, hey, that's too much, okay, whatever, I'll take it, that's fair. Let's not pretend like this student protester has Hamas connections and is actually threatening the lives of these Zionist students. Again, the ones who are facing the brunt of a crackdown are the anti-Zionist, pro-Palestine Jews in a group like Jewish Voice for Peace. Instead, what are they doing? They're doing this bullshit tap dance of like, free speech is unacceptable, free protest is unacceptable, because we're going to say you're hurting the feelings of Zionist Jews. Fuck out of here. Now who's the snowflakes? Now who's supporting cancel culture? Jesus Christ. All right. And then the last, we'll end on this one right here, okay? The U.S. decided to reimpose sanctions on Venezuela as hopes for democracy crumble. So the U.S. looked at everything going on around the world, and they said, you know what we need to do? Sanction Venezuela. You want to know why? Because they're acting very badly. Venezuela is really unhinged. Venezuela is really out of control. Venezuela doesn't seem to care about the laws and the rules. So we need to sanction them. You can't make up how comical this is. We are arming and funding and watching Israel commit a genocide and ethnic cleansing on a daily basis, killing over 40,000 Palestinians, torturing people, bombing hospitals, schools, mosques, churches, marketplaces, UN buildings, you name it. We've seen every war crime in the book, every day. They bombed Iran. They bombed Iraq. They're attacking the West Bank. They are completely and utterly unhinged. And the U.S. says, we need to sanction Venezuela because they're not acting right. How am I supposed to take you seriously? How can I take you seriously if this is what you're doing? I can't, and neither should you. We are now through the looking glass. We live in a fucking circus, and it's absolutely tragic and disgusting and dark. So Tucker Carlson went on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he gave us a number of, let's be kind and say, interesting moments. So we're going to dive into a bunch of them here. Right off the bat, I'm going to start with the most pathetic one. And you could actually see here that Rogan is like visibly stunned by what Tucker's saying in this clip. Tucker is going to deny evolution and smugly and arrogantly act like, well, obviously evolution's not true. This is wild. Let's dive in.
Evolution is real. And if there is this constant, I don't know, but it's visible. Like, you can measure it in certain animals.
You can measure adaptation.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence that evolution, in fact, I think we've kind of given up on the idea of evolution. The theory of evolution as articulated by Darwin is like kind of not true.
Right? In what sense?
Look at his face. Look at his face. All Rogan had to do was say, in what sense is evolution not true? And this is the dog that just caught the car. That's what this face is right here. How can you casually say something so verifiably incorrect? Watch, I'm going to break it down for you in a minute, but he conflates two different things, which is very common to conflate among like super Christian types. I don't know if he's particularly Christian, but like it's a very common thing that you hear in like fundamentalist evangelical Christian circles. But, like, it astonishingly incorrect. Let's keep going.
Well, in the most basic sense, the idea that, you know, all life emerged from a single cell organism and over time, and there would be a fossil record of that, and there's not. And
there's not a fossil record of transitionary species, like species that are adapting to its environment.
There's tons of record of adaptation, and you see it in your own life. I mean, I have a lot of dogs. I see adaptation in dogs, you know, through the...
Sure.
Litter to litter. But... No, there's no evidence at all that none, zero, that, yeah. You know, people, you know, evolve seamlessly from a single cell amoeba. No, there's not. There's not. There's no chain in the fossil record of that at all. And that's why you don't actually hear people, you hear them make reference to evolution because the theory of adaptation is clearly obviously true. But Darwin's theory is totally, that's why it's still a theory almost 200 years later. You know,
oh my God.
No, we have not.
Oh my God. He doesn't know the difference between a theory and a hypothesis in scientific terms. He doesn't know the difference. Guys, when somebody says, I have a theory in like colloquial, regular conversation, when somebody says, I have a theory on this, that's that person saying, yeah, this is what I think is the case. I'm not totally sure, but this is what I think. This is my theory. That's only for casual conversation. In scientific terms, a theory is nearly ironclad. He's conflating a theory and a hypothesis. The hypothesis is the thing in science that's like, look, we really don't know. We think it might be this, but we're going to have to like test it out. Like, the theory of gravity is a theory. Would you say, gravity, that's not true. That's not true. We debunk that one, bro. Oh, my God. Oh, this is like the sad. I mean, this is like all of the Reddit atheists from like 2007 are going to pop out of the woodworks here and lay the smackdown on Tucker Carlson's ass for that one. You don't know the difference between a hypothesis and a theory in scientific terms, and that a theory is nearly ironclad? Oh, my God.
And I can't even guess. I mean, I have my own theories on it, but they're not proven.
What are your theories?
God created people.
So remember before I said he conflates two things? Here are the two things he's conflating. He's conflating evolution, which is, I mean, definitionally how we evolved over time, right? And this thing called abiogenesis, which is what is the first life form ever created and how did it come about, right? Those are two different topics. Those are not the same. We know for sure that evolution is real. And it's almost like he admits that while not admitting it, because what does he say? Like, oh, adaptation is obviously real. Well, that's kind of what people mean when they say evolution, right? So evolution is real, 100%. But he's conflating that with abiogenesis, as if like the beginning of a life form for the first time ever is the same thing as evolution. That is not the same thing. Those are two totally different things and totally different fields of study. And you're right to point out that when it comes to abiogenesis, we know a hell of a lot less than we know about evolution. There's all sorts of hypotheses out there when it comes to abiogenesis. The one that, when I read about this like a decade ago, the one that stuck with me the most was that there was primordial soup, and you had a lightning strike hit the primordial soup, and that started the first ever living organism. That, you know, the fact that this primordial soup got hit with lightning was enough to spark something, which then started the process of evolution. And then over time, obviously, everything kind of developed from that, right? But again, two totally separate topics. So for him to say, God is real and he created us, even if you believe that, that is in no way, shape, or form debunking evolution. And in fact, if he were to continue down this line of logic, he would fall on the God of the gaps argument, right? That wherever there's a gap in the fossil record, we'll invoke God to come in and sort of perfect the thing so that the complexity and the order of it is set by a higher being. But of course, Tucker, the obvious rebuttal to that is if living things need a God to perfect them, right? If living things need a God to get all the nuance and the complexity and the detail just right, then by that logic, God, since he's even more intricate and complex and detailed, would need like a super God to make the God. And then the super God would need like a super super God to make the super God who made the God who made us, right? So it's not, you can't just draw a clean line and be like, God. That's not, that poses more questions than it answers. Now, by the way, am I here saying it's definitely the case that there's no God? No, I don't fucking know. The difference between me and him is I have the humility to say, when I don't know, I would consider myself an agnostic atheist. I don't know. I don't have all the answers. I don't think there's any evidence for a God. But I'm comfortable saying I don't know because I don't have all the answers. He's saying evolution is not real, false, and a God made us. I mean, you want to talk about comments that aren't real, that can't be backed up. Jesus Christ. All right, let's keep going.
God created people, you know, distinctly, and animals. I mean, I think that's like, I think what every person on Earth thought until the mid-19th century, actually.
Right. But
it's not a new idea.
Okay, first of all, what the fuck was that laugh? Second of all, does he think that's like a debate-ending point? People believed this for a really, really, really long time, bro. There's got to be some wisdom in it. Well, people also thought the fucking world was flat. People thought that the stars in the sky, it was God poking holes through the sky, and the light shining through was the light of heaven shining through. People believed all sorts of preposterous things and still do believe all sorts of preposterous things. That's not an argument.
Every person on Earth thought until the mid-19th century, actually.
Right. But the,
it's not
but
a new idea.
They didn't have computers. They didn't have a general understanding that we have today of the process.
Do you think we understand more now?
Yes.
Really?
You don't think that we understand more today?
We understand way less. We understand so little that...
Did you say we understand way less now? Did he say that?
Really?
You don't think that we understand more today?
We understand way less. We understand so little that...
I think he said we understand way less. But one more time. Is that... Am I hearing this wrong, guys? You tell me in the comment section. It sounds like he's saying... Rogan's like, yeah, we understand more now. And he's saying, we understand way less.
Do we understand more today?
We understand way less. We understand so little.
Yeah, he's saying we understand way less now than what we did in 1728. That's an insane point to make. That's insane.
That we're actually sitting here allowing like a bunch of greedy, stupid, childless software engineers in Northern California to like flirt with the extinction of mankind.
Okay, you can be strategically stupid. You could be like on the wrong trajectory with the things that you're interested in, but you can also have like more data and information and facts. So we obviously have more data and information and facts today than we did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, right? I mean, how is that something anybody can argue against? Okay, all right. We're just getting started on this, bro. Now we're going to get to talk about aliens slash ghosts, or I don't... You tell me what he's talking about here.
So they're from here, and they've been here for thousands of years, whatever they are. And it's pretty clear to me that they're spiritual entities, whatever that means. They're supernatural, and which is to say supernatural means above the natural, above the observable nature. And... they don't behave according to the laws of science as measured by people, you know, and they've been here for a long time. And there's a ton of evidence they're under the ocean and under the ground. So like with that fact set, what do you conclude?
They're spiritual entities. Spiritual entities. One more time. I'm trying to be fair. I really am. I'm trying to like hear it out. Think of like steel manning it. I'm struggling.
From here, and they've been here for thousands of years.
Who's they?
Whatever they are. And it's pretty clear to me that they're spiritual entities, whatever that means. They're supernatural, and which is...
Spiritual or supernatural entities. So people are talking like, oh, he's referring to aliens. I think you could say aliens are like ghosts or something like that.
They, supernatural means above the natural, above the observable.
I think he goes on to say they don't come from a different planet. And he says here that they come from here. So then does he mean ghosts? He's not talking about aliens as in like from another planet. So you mean ghosts or spiritual entities? Spirits? I don't...
Nature. And they don't behave according to the laws of science as measured by people, you know. And they've been here for a long time. And there's a ton of evidence they're under the ocean and under the ground. So like with that fact set, what do you conclude?
Okay, he's kind of doing like a Alex Jones type impression here, right? He's kind of doing that because this is Jones talked about something similar when he was on Joe Rogan's podcast. I don't know. I find this whole conversation, this part, so silly. Like, nobody knows. You don't know. I don't know. Again, my default perspective would be there's really no evidence for aliens or ghosts or spirits or whatever. That's my default perspective. But I'm more than happy to say I'm agnostic. I don't know. Any conversation about stuff like this that doesn't begin and end with, I don't fucking know. It's hard for me to take seriously. It is. All right. Again, we're just getting going. So now we got some 9/11 stuff.
What's the justification for classifying any document around 9/11? There's no justification.
Well, the same justification of classifying the documents about the Kennedy assassination.
Well, exactly. 61 years later.
Yeah. Or releasing the COVID vaccine data 75 years later.
Of course.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. I really don't know the answer. But there is one. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's not methods and sources. You think it's methods and sources? Trying to protect their Saudi sources? I don't think so.
You know, the wildest thing about Tower 7 is that if you just say it looks like a controlled demolition, people get mad at you.
Why?
Well, I don't know.
Well,
because I'm not saying that it is a controlled demolition, but I'm saying if you watch it, it looks like a controlled demolition.
But that happens all the time. Buildings catch fire and they just implode in on themselves. I think it happens every week, right? All these poultry plants and manufacturing plants that keep getting burned through fire. They all like...
It's the way it went down.
Yeah. So... I say, why do they respond that way? And of course, I responded that way. And I think looking back, the reason that I did was because if you call that into question, you had to ask a lot of other really obvious questions you didn't want to deal with. And you might arrive at the conclusion that a lot of your most basic assumptions are false and that you've been had And it's just too destabilizing, maybe.
Right.
Look, Tucker's clearly flirting with the notion of 9/11 conspiracy theory or 9/11 trutherism, the idea that perhaps the U.S. government was behind 9/11. Okay, but just say that then, right? I don't know. As I get older, I have less of a tolerance for this, like, I'm going to flirt with this thing, but not actually say it, bro. And if you accuse me of saying it, then you're being dishonest, bro. Gotcha. It's like, all right, look, you want to have this conversation? You want to be edgy? Okay. Then just say, yeah, I think maybe it was done by the United States. I mean, then it would be more bold, right? It'd be more bold. It'd be more honest. But it's just like flirting with it, leaving himself the wiggle room where if somebody accuses him of being a 9/11 truther, he'd be like, no, no. All right, more.
Tower 7 is, they go, well, okay. If it was a controlled demolition, how was that engineered? Did they just decide to do that before September 11th? And you know how long it would take to rig a building like that?
Right.
Or was it built into the building? And how would they know it would even work? And how would they do something like that? And how would there not be a record of it being built into the building?
It's interesting because now Rogan is arguing against the idea.
For someone to engineer,
and where's
the
sound signature
tower?
on the tape? There would be a sound of the explosions.
Yeah,
going
bang, 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 bang.
Which is
okay. They're both arguing against it now.
Fair question.
Yeah, so a lot of fair questions. And has there ever been a building that experienced a tremendous amount of damage because two enormous skyscrapers fell right next to it, damaged it, and then massive fires started? And then there's diesel generators that are in the basement, so they have all this fuel. So they have this incredible inferno in the basement that weakens the structure. Mm-hmm. Is that
okay? They're steel manning. They're steel manning the non-truther position.
It collapsed. Maybe.
Totally possible. Yeah. A lot of building engineers disagree with that, as you know.
Yeah.
And they don't think that could have happened in the way you just described. I'm agnostic on it. What I know, because I don't know the answer, and I have no way of knowing. All I know is that there's no justification for keeping those documents secret that I can think of. And if there is, tell us what it is. No one has bothered because nobody presses. And it's, you know, I'll add that to the list of outrages.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough. Look, when I was younger, I definitely flirted with the 9/11 truther conspiracies too. Look, I'll say, you can make some really fucking convincing sounding documentaries that can dupe your average person, and I consider myself in the category of average person. And once you go down that rabbit hole, man, there's no getting out. Once you go down that rabbit hole, and the thing is, like, maybe even a lot of the so-called facts that are put into the 9/11 documentaries, probably a bunch of them are skewed. Maybe even most of them are skewed. But like, if you just take it at face value when you watch it, it sounds super duper convincing. And so really you have to go back to like basic premises to see, hey, does this really make sense? Okay, so like, so the World Trade Center came down. These are the people in the country with arguably the most power and money and prestige. These people would be the heart of any kind of conspiracy, right? Because we live in a society dominated by big money and corruption. So these people would be the driving force behind conspiracies. Why would they target themselves? Why would the wealthy and the powerful take down like the beating heart of what they're doing? That doesn't seem to make sense. And if you make the argument that like, well, you know, Bush and Cheney did this because they wanted to do the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq, and we have the Project for a New American Century where the neocons laid this out very clearly. That part is true, but why wouldn't you, if you're going to do a false flag attack, why wouldn't you have an empty U.S. Navy ship and sink the U.S. Navy ship and not kill thousands of innocent civilians in the process? Right? And not kill a lot of people who are moneyed interests, who are very powerful. Again, a people with a lot of money and power and prestige died when the towers came down. In no conspiracy would they be a target. They would be the ones steering the ship and doing the conspiracy and driving the conspiracy. They wouldn't be the victims of the conspiracy, right? So if you're going to do some sort of a false flag, it would make a hell of a lot more sense to just sink like a U.S. Navy ship with nobody on it, claim you were attacked by Iraq. There's all these questions that arise. Like, also, if you wanted to use it to attack Iraq, why didn't they first come out and say it actually was Saddam Hussein who did it and not say it was Osama, and then they had to spend a long time building the argument that Osama was protected by Saddam Hussein? They could have just came out and said Saddam did it and jumped right to the Iraq war. So it's just, there's a lot of things that don't really add up, right? And it again, you have to try to get to the root of the conspiracy to the premises, to the core of it. Like, what are we assuming is true here before you even dive into the specifics and the particulars? And like, look, on that front, there's a lot of things that sound super convincing when you talk about the 9/11 conspiracy theory, like the towers falling at free fall speed, right? This is one of the things that's in all the 9/11 truth documentaries. You drop a pool ball, billiard ball from the top of the World Trade Center, and in the amount of time it would take for that ball to hit the ground, it's the same amount of time that it took for the tower to collapse into the ground. And it's like, that's kind of crazy. So in other words, there was no resistance as the thing fell. It didn't take a while to do it. It fell like immediately, collapsed into its own footprint. Now, look, I'm not a building engineer, but they certainly made a convincing sounding case in the 9/11 truth documentaries that were like, this isn't possible without explosives. But then you come back to what Rogan said there, which is like, yeah, but who rigged it and wouldn't people have seen it? And that would have taken a really long time beforehand. And there's really nothing on the record of that happening. So anyway, you can get lost down that conspiracy rabbit hole is my point. But I think what Tucker's doing, and there's going to be more evidence of this in a second, he knows he's not part of Fox News anymore. He's not part of traditional media anymore. It allows him to let his freak flag fly a little bit. And if anything, that'll get you more attention in the new media landscape and the independent media landscape, is be like, I'm the guy who's going to say the shit that other people won't say. And so now he's got one foot in like the conspiracy camp too, because he knows that's a great way to drive views. So, all right, now I'm still not done. Let's continue here. This one is actually a rare one. I think he gets this one right, if I'm being honest.
Members of Congress are terrified of the intel agencies. I'm not guessing at that. They've told me that, including people on the intel committee, including people who run the intel committee, the people whose job it is to oversee and keep in line these enormous secretive agencies whose budgets we can't even know. They're black budgets. They're the parents. The agencies are the children. They're afraid of the agencies. That's not compatible with democracy. Democracy is a really simple system, even representative democracy like ours. The people rule. They do so through elections. They express their preference through voting. They send their people to the capital city to run the government on their behalf. Whenever you have unelected people who are not accountable to anyone making the biggest decisions, you don't have a democracy. You have something else, another system. I would call it a tyranny or whatever you want to call it. It's not a democracy. So that's like super obvious. It's playing out in front of everyone and no one cares and no one does anything about it. And I think the reason is because they're threatened. And if you look at the committee chairmen who allow this shit to happen year after year, they're all, and I don't know, people say, oh, they're compromised or being blackmailed. Or I don't have evidence of that, but I know them and they all have things to hide. I know that for a fact. And so it's not a stretch of imagination to imagine that, you know, some committee chairman who's allowing warrantless spying on Americans to continue or whatever abuse they're allowing, knowing fully or hiding the truth about UAPs, ignoring the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, like, why are they doing that? It's not impossible to imagine that some guy with a drinking problem or a weird sex life, and that's very common up there. That's why they're doing it, because they don't want to be exposed. I don't have evidence of that. I don't have proof of that.
Right.
But that's not a crazy thing to assume that that could be happening. And I said to somebody, a very powerful person, the other day in a conversation in my kitchen, an elected official holds a really senior position, a very famous person. I was going crazy. I was so mad about all this stuff and about the warrantless spying and about the funding for these insane wars. And I said to the guy who serves in one of the legislative bodies, like, I'm so mad my dogs were afraid. They're like, well, why are you yelling? Because I don't yell at home. But I was like, all these people are controlled. They're all, you know, got weird sex lives and all these things are hiding and they're being blackmailed by the intel agencies. And he said, and I'm quoting, I know. I was like, okay, so at this point, we're just sort of admitting that's real? Like, why do we allow that to continue?
Yeah, that point is undeniable. Look, the CIA, the NSA, the intelligence agencies absolutely are out of control. You have people there who are basically like career bureaucrats who are there from administration to administration to administration. So that's why they're called the deep state. They're the ones who are there for a very extended period of time. And it's not like an administration that comes in and goes out. It could be 4 years. It could be 8 years. It's not like a congressperson or a senator who, again, they're up for re-election at some point. These are the people that have real permanent power and staying power. And you get some of the worst atrocities committed by, say, the CIA, meddling in foreign countries, overthrowing governments, funding death squads. I mean, you name it. The NSA illegally spying on all Americans going back to the days of the Patriot Act, and it was just reauthorized recently. Well, how could they allow this? Why would they allow this? I mean, look, I don't know if it's as nefarious as they have dirt and they're willing to use it on these people to make them vote a certain way. But certainly they have some degree of power that appears above and beyond the Congress people, or at least it's in cahoots with all the politicians, right? So it is kind of unacceptable. Now, the final point I will make, though, is that, you know, Tucker's a guy who's, he's like very openly and publicly kind of a Trump supporter. And I think he views Trump as like a bulwark against the deep state. And there's absolutely no reason to believe that. As president, he gave the deep state everything they wanted, right? And he's going to do it again. So the idea that like he's the solution, he's the answer, he's going to bust things up. Well, he was president for 4 years. He didn't. You know, Tucker talks about, oh my God, these stupid foreign wars that we shouldn't be in. Well, Trump kept us in Iraq. Trump kept us in Afghanistan. Trump bombed Syria. Trump ripped up the Iran agreement, which is now bringing us to the brink of war with Iran. He tried to coup Venezuela. Again, you want to talk about CIA operations, which are completely immoral and unethical and unnecessary and stupid and dumb. There you go. That was happening under Donald Trump. He armed, you know, now it's funny, he postures as like against the Ukraine-Russia war. He was pulling the strings behind the scenes with Mike Johnson recently to get even more funding to Ukraine. He armed Ukraine when he was president. He was very hawkish against Vladimir Putin. The idea that he's not, that he's like standing up to these intel agencies. No, he works with them. He is one of them. He is an elitist with incredible power and privilege, and he wants to be in the club, and he acts like he's in the club, right? Now that he has legal problems because he committed crimes, that doesn't mean that, you know, he's an enemy of the deep state. It's not, he super served the deep state in the same way that he super served billionaires and multimillionaires while posturing as being anti-establishment. So that would be my disagreement with him. He didn't mention anything about Trump there, but it's just funny that he can give a rant like this while also being a Trump supporter. All right. I think I got a couple more for you. Oh boy. I don't know if we'll listen to this whole thing, but here he's talking about Alex Jones, and he basically asks, like, is he a prophet?
The end stage of mind control is censorship, right? But it begins long before that, and it begins by creating false categories that wall off your willingness, that prevent you from wanting to know certain things or talk to certain people. And name calling is the most obvious tool. Like, he's a crank, he's a racist, he's a whatever, fill it in. And then you're like, I can't listen to that person. And I have to say, your willingness to platform or to have a conversation with Alex Jones, I think was a revolutionary act, actually. Not that everything Alex Jones says is right. It's not. Not everything I say is right or anyone says is right. But Alex Jones is an interesting person. And even if he's not interesting, he has been walled off from the rest of us through name calling. And your willingness to be like, no, actually, we're just going to listen to Alex Jones and you can decide for yourself.
Well, Alex has been my friend for more than 20 years. Well,
by the way, like, okay, I could understand that argument in some contexts, right? If nobody is platforming Noam Chomsky and you give Noam Chomsky a platform, yeah, that's a really good thing. It's sort of a revolutionary act. It's like he's being censored perhaps because he speaks truth to power too much and the mainstream networks don't want that. So I could see that argument making sense in some contexts. But in other contexts, it just doesn't make sense, right? Like, you wouldn't say this about platforming Nick Fuentes, right? It would very revolutionary of you to have on that guy who's like, I am a Nazi and I love Nazism and hate, and Adolf Hitler is based. People look at that and be like, I don't know, maybe in that instance, there might be a reason why people shy away from having him on, because he's advocating some truly atrocious thing. Another example, if you have on Netanyahu, right, and have like a casual, flippant, you know, nothing, nonchalant conversation with him where you try to humanize him and make him sound normal and talk about his dogs or whatever, people be like, okay, this isn't a revolutionary or brave act. This is just like you are whitewashing a guy who's a literal war criminal and a genocidal maniac. Right. So in some contexts, that argument makes sense. In other contexts, it doesn't really make sense. When it comes to Alex Jones, the thing that annoys me, and he's not as bad as Nick Fuentes, he's not as bad as Netanyahu. Every now and then he says something that's true. But I feel like he gets played up all the time, like the rare areas when he gets something right online. And it's like, why are we not talking about the times he's been horrifically and comically wrong? Why are we not talking about how he thinks Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are literal demons from hell? And they smell like sulfur. It's like all the super insane things get a massive pass. And look, man, he's 20% or less is the shit he gets right. So why is nobody talking about the 80%? I don't know. That drives me crazy. It's just it's a very online thing, right?
Exactly. But you were not allowed to talk to him. And when you hear Alex Jones talk, you may not agree with everything he says. I don't know that I do. But you definitely understand why they told you you couldn't listen to Alex Jones.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I had him as one of the first guests when I came over to Spotify.
Love that.
I was like, let's go.
What did they say?
Well, a lot of people weren't happy. We lost sponsors. It was an issue. But I think it did the job. You know, it regardless of what he said that's incorrect, clearly the Sandy Hook thing was incorrect. you know, Alex, I know Alex personally, so I know what he was going through. And, you know, everybody wants to talk about mental health and they want to praise people for being honest about their mental health issues and support them on their mental health journey to wellness. Alex has gone through some real issues. And one of the reasons why he's gone through some issues is because that guy is uncovering real shit that's terrifying every fucking day.
And like you just said, he's also being dead wrong about Sandy Hook and legally defaming the victims' families. I don't know, that kind of matters to me. Also, the you remember when he went on this intergalactic gremlin rant on Joe's show? Look, Rogan can do whatever he wants to do. He's friends with Alex Jones, but let's not pretend like the reason he brought him on the show is because, number one, he's his friend, and number two, the guy is fucking colossally entertaining. That's really what it boils down to, right? And I'm not criticizing that, but let's not have a jerk-off fest where everybody's jacking each other off about how amazing and correct Alex Jones is, because he's wrong way more than he's right. And again, this is a rare issue where, like, mainstream media is more correct than the online sphere that like to highlight the 10 or 20% of things where Jones is right and act like... And again, Tucker literally goes on to say, is he some sort of a prophet? No, I think he's an overweight, alcoholic Texan who's probably either severely bipolar or bordering on paranoid schizophrenic. That, I mean, that's kind of harsh, but that's what I think he is.
You know, he's just fucking constantly stressed, freaking out. And when you see so many lies and so much propaganda and so many psyops that are being done on people, you start seeing them where they don't exist.
Yeah, and also, at a certain point, you have to say, he's the one doing propaganda, right? He does... I'll never be able to get over how he postures as so anti-establishment and anti-elitist and anti-globalist and anti-New World Order, but then he sucks off Trump on a daily basis as if Trump is some sort of a bulwark against the establishment. He's not. Not even close. He cut taxes for the wealthy. He deregulated Wall Street. He destroyed the regulatory state, even like the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. They made that way, way weaker than it was. He served the predatory payday loan industry when they gave him $1 million for his inauguration. Total, rank, brazen corruption. He took $100 million two separate times from Sheldon Adelson and then let Sheldon Adelson control our Israel policy, which is why we got the embassy moved to Jerusalem, which pissed off Hamas and helped spark October 7th. And we have the Abraham Accords, which was a whole fucking middle finger to Palestinians, again, sparking anger and leading to October 7th. Let's not pretend like this guy, he's not anti-establishment in any way, shape, or form. And Alex Jones tried to simultaneously suck off Trump and act like he's anti-establishment while pretending like I'm against all the power centers. Except the fucking biggest power center there is, right? Alex likes to say he's against the Russia-Ukraine war. Well, Trump just pulled the strings behind the scenes to get billions more dollars sent to Ukraine. Anything to say about that? Anything to say about him arming Ukraine? Anything to say about that? Again, he kept us in Iraq, he kept us in Afghanistan, the list goes on. Like, sometimes he's the one doing the propaganda, guys. He's the one doing the propaganda. Let's be honest about that.
Well, and he's also channeling some stuff. You can't call 9/11 in detail because you're super informed.
Before the fact.
He called it.
Yes.
He literally called it in the summer of 2001.
He's channeling stuff. Look... There's that very famous memo that was left on Bush's desk, Bin Laden determined to attack within the U.S., right? After the fact, we all, in retrospect, we were like, oh my God, he had a memo warning about it. Could Alex have gotten that right? And that was a genuinely good call? Yes. But, you know, there's a lot of damage done when you take his good calls and then pretend like, you know, very broadly, this guy's spot on. He's not. He's not. But of course, Alex is promoting this to... Anyway, we got another story. Tomorrow on Alex Jones, which you're not going to want to miss. It is incredible. The way his fans reacted to him when he said, I don't want to spoil it, but we got that coming up. All right, final one. This one is actually an area where I think Tucker is just right, and I'm shocked he said this.
You could say the same about the atomic bomb, right?
Yes, you could.
And you could say that we have to develop it like Oppenheimer felt before the Nazis did.
I love that. How'd that work? How'd that work?
Well,
I love, by the way, that people on my side, I'll just admit it, on the right, you know, have spent the last 80 years defending dropping nuclear weapons on civilians. Like, are you joking?
Right.
That's just like prima facie evil.
Yeah.
If you can't, well, if we hadn't done that, then this, that, the other thing, that was actually a great savings. Like, no, it's wrong to drop nuclear weapons on people. And if you find yourself arguing that it's a good thing to drop nuclear weapons on people, then you are evil. Like, it's not a tough one, right? Is that a hard call for you? It's not a hard call for me. So with that in mind, like, why would you want nuclear weapons? It's like just a mindless, childish sort of intellectual exercise to justify, like, oh, no, it's really good because someone else will get it. How about no? How about, like, spending all of your effort to prevent this from happening? Would you kill baby Hitler, you know, famously?
Right.
So I don't know why we're sitting back and allowing this to happen if we really believe it will extinguish the human race or enslave the human race. Like, how can that be good?
Damn. It's just basically like, hey, if you supported dropping the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you're evil. Purposefully massacring hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians. You're evil. That's evil. It's not a close one. By the way, I'm sure you guys have all seen, there's a great Sean video, whatever his name is now, breaking down all of the specifics about the nuclear attack on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Super long video, but it gives you everything you'd ever want to know about it. And you should definitely go check that out. Bottom line is, Japan was already absolutely defeated. They were defeated. It was not at all necessary to do that. And also, as a matter of principle, you should never purposefully attack innocent civilians. That does sort of make you evil. That's terrorism, and it makes you evil. It's not okay. Oh, hey, when we do it, it's okay. No, I don't accept that. I don't buy that. That's absurd. And Tucker agrees. That's actually shocking. By the way, there was massive backlash over this from the right. There were a lot of people on the right who were going after him for it. Which, sorry, right-wingers, Tucker's totally right about this. And there's another thing he says in the podcast where he says, like, I don't read any responses online. Like, I don't watch stuff. So, you know, whatever I say, I say. And he won't even know if there's a backlash. That's healthy. That's healthy. And every creator should take that, you know, approach to one extent or another, because it's way better for your mental health. And you're not going to get, like, bullied into a corner or just go along with the crowd, right? You're going to say what you actually think. So I was shocked to hear that, too, that he's not plugged in. But this was probably the most base comment of the entire thing. There's another part where he goes after Barry Weiss. I thought that was good, too. But yeah, there you have it. We're all over the map here. We're all over the map here. But perhaps the biggest part, of course, was what I led with. Denying evolution. What? All right, y'all. Let me explain to you exactly why I have a burning, passionate hatred for all these scumbag politicians in Washington, D.C. So over the weekend, we had this big show where the media and corporate politicians in both parties have been screaming from the rooftops for the past few weeks. We have a must-pass bill. It's a must-pass bill. It's not open to debate or questioning. We are dealing with a crisis and a scandal and a tragedy, and we must pass this legislation. Now, what's the legislation they're referring to? Well, the House voted on four separate bills, but then they packaged it together and are sending it to the Senate, where it's going to be one bill, and then the Senate is overwhelmingly likely going to pass it, and the president is 100% going to sign it. So what is this must-pass legislation that was all the rage over the weekend, where they were, you know, all in, working really hard to try to get the deal done? More money for Ukraine, more money for Israel, money for Taiwan, and a TikTok ban. This is what they define as must-pass legislation. We have to do it now. Don't ask any questions. Let's get it done. So I think it's about $60 billion for Ukraine. It's over $26 billion for Israel, $8 billion for Taiwan, and again, the TikTok ban. The specifics of that are, over a nine-month period, is basically forcing divestment from the current owners of TikTok to some American owner, and if that doesn't happen, TikTok, one of the most popular social media apps in the country. Gonzo, dunzo, over. Okay, I have so much to say about all this. Let's start with the lowest hanging fruit. It's a must-pass bill to send $26 billion more to Israel. Israel, just the other day, bombed Rafah, the last remaining safe area in Gaza where a million Palestinians are, trying to avoid bombs being dropped on top of their head. Israel just bombed Iraq to go after some Shia Iranian proxies in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Council. Israel just attacked the West Bank, where there is no Hamas. They bulldozed a village. They ripped up the roads. They destroyed the sewer lines. For the past however long it's been, since October 7th until today, Israel has been nonstop bombing hospitals, schools, mosques, churches, marketplaces, stores, homes, factories, UN buildings. They've killed 41,000 Palestinians, of which over 36,000 are innocent civilians, over 15,000 children, over 9,000 women. They are starving all of Gaza. They are engaged in the most blatant, brazen, open genocidal campaign and ethnic cleansing I've ever seen in my life. And it was a must pass to send them $26 billion more. What the fuck do you think that $26 billion more is going to go towards? You think it's going to go towards puppies and rainbows? You think it's going to go towards a universal basic income program? You think it's going to go to reduce poverty? No, it 100% is going to be used for this project of annihilation. Every single person in Congress that voted to send more money to Israel has blood on their hands, and I think it's fair to say they're doing the equivalent of funding the Nazis in 1940. That's what this is. We can't play dumb. We can't be stupid. Look at the evidence. Look at the facts on the ground. Look at what they're doing. And look at the fact that we are still supporting them, which then leads to the question, guys, and I'm going to ask this question sincerely. Is there anything that Israel could do that would make the U.S. say, you know what? No, you're done. Clearly, we're never going to sanction them. We're never going to condemn them fully at the U.N. We're never going to force a two-state solution. We're never going to arrest Netanyahu and bring him up on war crimes charges, which 100% should happen. Clearly, those things are never going to happen. But is there anything Israel could do that could even make us just cut the money off? Stop sending billions more to them. Honestly, I'm at the point now where I think even if they nuked Gaza, they would still try to send them more money. To be this dense and detached from the real-world consequences of their actions is fucking disgusting. By the way, there was a block of Democrats in the House who voted against this, but I believe about 80% of even the Democrats voted for this, and all the Republicans, except one, Thomas Massey, voted for the money to Israel. So let's just start with that. A must-pass bill is arming a country in the middle of a genocide so they can continue it. Must-pass. Now, the Ukraine thing, look, I understand supporting Ukraine. They were illegally invaded by Russia. Russia committed a horrific act of aggression against Ukraine. So I sympathize with them. And by the way, when they passed this, they were all waving, all the Democrats were like waving Ukrainian flags on the floor of the House. By the way, let's reel it in with that, please. Let's reel it in with that. This is the U.S. waving a foreign country's flag. But by the way, they should be waving Palestinian flags. I love the moral detachment, the disconnect here, where it's like, on the one hand, we're going to arm and fund the people who were illegally invaded. And on the other hand, we're going to arm and fund the people who are doing the illegal invasion. No moral consistency whatsoever. Not in the slightest. But look, I understand the Ukraine thing, but we've already passed, what, 12, 14, 16 different attempts of giving them a tremendous amount of money and weapons. So how often are we going to, I mean, if we're on time number 182, are we still going to do a 183rd? Clearly, at some point, you're going to have to solve this thing. You're going to have to sit down. You're going to have to negotiate. It's going to end that way either way. Might as well have it done now. Did you know that in Ukraine, they're now sending mentally challenged people to the front lines? You have, like, senior citizens and mentally challenged people who are sent to the front lines, and it's like, all right, we're going to force you. Go ahead, defend. Defend your country. So we're going to prolong this by another year, 2 years, 3 years. And for what? At the end of the day, you're going to sit down at the table anyway, and you're going to have to negotiate some sort of a deal, even though none of us like that. None of us want that, because Russia did the illegal and offensive act. So in a perfectly moral and just world, it's like, okay, fucking withdraw. Withdraw, Russia, and Putin should be brought up on fucking war crimes charges. That's if the world made sense. The world doesn't make sense. So you know what's going to happen. Eventually, you're going to have to negotiate. But no, we're going to fund this war for another year, 2 years, whatever it is. Watch thousands more people die. So again, a must pass. Must pass Ukraine funding, must pass Israel funding, and must pass Taiwan funding. This is also like if China invades at some point, we're going to make sure that they're Taiwan is okay, and we care about them because they create a lot of our microchips. We have an economic tie with them. We don't want China to expand. You guys know that whole thing. And then we got the TikTok ban. Can you imagine passing a bill during an election year when Biden is struggling with young people? He's struggling with young voters. Yeah, let's pass a ban on their favorite fucking app. I'm sure that'll work out great for me. I mean, this is a political malpractice. Are you trying to lose? And by the way, why are they doing this? There's a front here. The front is, oh, Chinese owners, blah. Like, that's the front. That's the veneer of the argument. The reality is, there's been a lot of reporting about how TikTok is a hotbed of pro-Palestine commentary and anti-Israel commentary. And they don't like that. Our Congress, which is bought and paid for by AIPAC and the DMFI and Israel lobby, they hate that you can get a pro-Palestine perspective on one of the biggest social media apps, especially for young people. And so they want to ban it. By the way, this also gives a tremendous amount of power, broader powers, to let the president crack down on, look, if you could just ban one social media app, why wouldn't you be able to ban another one? Right? This grants broad power and authority to just control the internet on an authoritarian's whim. Must pass. These are all must pass bills. So like I said, they got through the House. They're going to get through the Senate. Biden's going to sign it. Now, the final point I want to make is very simple. The fact that they have the nerve to act like these are must pass and we need to do it right now, and it's super important that we keep funding this genocide and we ban a social media app. We live in a country where there are 650,000 homeless Americans. Have they ever called an emergency session and called a bill to abolish homelessness a must pass? Of those 650,000, about 50,000 of the homeless people in this country are veterans. Somebody goes and fights for this country, then they come home. Sorry, shit out of luck. If you don't have the money, if you don't have the resources, if you're mentally not well, well, if you're homeless, you're homeless. What are you going to do? 50,000 homeless veterans, 650,000 homeless Americans. Nobody ever said, well, must pass legislation. We have a scandal, a crisis, Americans on the street. We need to act immediately. That would be more of a must pass in a world that made sense. Medical bills are the number one cause of bankruptcy in this country. I mean, we're talking about must pass. We gotta abolish medical debt. We gotta abolish all of it. We gotta abolish all of it. This is unacceptable. We're the only developed country with even a category of medical debt. Number one cause of bankruptcy. That's insane. We need to do something about this immediately. The housing market, the prices are immensely unaffordable. Emergency. We need to get together to find a way to reduce these home prices so that people have a chance to live a decent life. None of these things. None of these things. Flint, Michigan with the fucking poison water. Shout out to Jordan Sheridan, who's been on this beat for a really, really long time. He's the last person in the country who's looking at this and caring about it. Flint, Michigan has had poisoned water for years. It was a must pass. We need to go to Congress and fix this ASAP. We have a number of cities in this country that have poisoned water. We need to upgrade the pipes immediately. None of that is must pass. Nobody cares. Nobody says anything. Must pass is for fucking war funding and bailing out Wall Street and banning social media apps that say things that are politically incorrect on them. This is why I hate these motherfuckers, and this is why you should too. All right, guys, I'm the man. I'm here to give you all the important news of the day. That's what I'm doing. But every now and then, you got to have some fun. And you got to sprinkle in some lighthearted stuff. So look, we're going to do a little bit of an investigation here. We have a report that's been floating around. We have some arguments here. We have allegedly, Donald Trump he's been in court, right? He has to go for this court trial. It's a criminal trial, the hush money trial in New York. And we already know for sure that he's been falling asleep in the courtroom. And we know for sure that's happened multiple times. We have a number of sources that have come out and said, yeah, that's what happened. Now, they don't have cameras in there, right? There's some sort of rule or law that you can't. But there's enough sources saying, oh, homie was falling asleep, that write it in stone. So we know that part. But the update we just got coming out of that courtroom is chef's kiss. So they are claiming he's ripping ass, dog. They are claiming he is lighting it up in there, just letting it rip, that as he's falling asleep, he's farting, and that it's actually impacting the people around him. So, look, we know the sleeping part is real. This part is a little more speculative, but I'm going to walk you through it, and then we'll break it down. And by the way, at the end of this, we have Snopes looked into this. Very interesting. Very interesting. So here we go. This is what we're hearing right now.
Returning to the court proceedings as well, Maggie Haberman reports that Donald Trump continued to fall asleep during the proceedings as well. And, you know, what I'm hearing from my sources as well is that, you know, and I'm hearing from credible sources who know what's going on in the courtroom. And what I'm hearing is that, take it for what it's worth, but that Donald Trump is actually farting in the courtroom and that it's very stinky around him. It's a putrid odor in the courtroom, and that Trump's lawyers are like repulsed by the scent and the smell. And I'm not just saying that to be like, oh, funny, funny. I'm actually, you know, we have good sources there, and I'm hearing it from actual credible people that as he's kind of falling asleep, he is actually passing gas and that his lawyers are really struggling with the smell. I think you'll actually start to hear more of that. But again, from real credible sources. Now, take it for what it's worth. They may be going off the record, I mean, on background and telling me that because of, you know, it's the Midas touch and they, you know, they think that we want to hear that. So you could judge it how you want to judge it. But real credible people who are there have saying that it's putrid around him.
So these are, just so everybody understands, this guy who's reporting it, he's with the Midas Touch Network. And Midas Touch are some of the biggest like resistance liberals in the world. I mean, they are all about that Trump hating life. They swim in it. They live it. They, every fiber of their being is dedicated on a daily basis to hating the shit out of Donald Trump. No pun intended, saying hating the shit. No pun intended. So again, he even says it. He says, look, take it for what it's worth. But look, we're going to dive a little bit deeper because I don't know how many of you guys remember this, but this was floating around not that long ago. There was a hashtag, Diaper Don, that was floating around. And when I first saw that, I was like, come on, son. Look, I hate Trump as much as the next guy, but you got to be fair. You got to try to be objective with these things. But I went down that rabbit hole to see, is there any there about this idea that he's constantly letting it rip or he's wearing Depends? And I'm going to lay out the case for you, and you guys tell me. So there's a number of stories that sort of back up this notion. Let's start with this one. This is somebody who used to work on The Apprentice.
What's the deal with the diaper rumors?
That's true. Sorry, now, I cut you off.
When you say it's true, like on a scale of like 1 to 10, I definitely absolutely know.
Witnessed, bro. Witnessed him soiling himself in a rage sitting there. On The Apprentice set, Celebrity Apprentice set, because he can't read. Same thing. He flew into a rage over the word arbitrage one time. Okay. Yeah. Soils himself, has to go off set, gets cleaned up by Keith Schiller. Keith's nickname was Wet Wipes. Okay. The crew called it the shit show. Sorry to curse, but can you imagine being the boom operator? You're wearing your headphones, holding the mic above him, and you hear that? He did it in the Oval Office. There's a clip of him doing it with the Turkish president, right? Erdogan. I always say his name wrong. It's not a hard G. Yeah. And the Feinstein and Dianne Feinstein, and they're sitting there in the Oval Office, and he clearly, you know, has some kind of bowel movement, but you can, and you see them look.
I'm going to show you that video in a second.
Like they hear it, but you can look up videos. Your viewers can look it up, and you'll find photos of him with the outline of Depends. And I'll tell you why he wears that, because speed addiction makes you incontinent, right? Opiates make you the opposite, make you constipated. Speed makes you go, right? So he eats fast food all day. In meatloaf, like that's all he ever eats, you know, sorry for the graphics, you know, and then he snorts speed and he's almost 70 years old at the time. He's in his mid 60s. So he just lets it rip and you never know, you know, so you got to have some insurance against the shark, you know, and that's Depends.
Now, look, I will say on the speed thing, we know that's true because, you know, there was remember the very famous tweet of him on Cinco de Mayo where he's like, I love Mexicans. And it was him like eating a taco bowl. In that picture, if you zoom in, there's a drawer open in the background in his desk, and he's got a bunch of those, a UK version of Sudafed, which is known for being a really strong upper. There was like some active ingredient that was taken out of the Sudafed that sold in the US. He got the UK version of Sudafed because it had the massive stimulant upper effects, and he had it all in his drawer. Remember that? Remember when in the multiple debates he had. There were some of them where he could not stop. He could not stop sniffing, snorting. Guys, anybody who's ever snorted Coke knows. That's the Coke nose. That's the, you know, you have a couple lines, you got the drip going, and you can't help but do that. So the accusation is, it, you know, he varies the upper, but it could be that UK version of Sudafed, which we know he took for a while. It could be Adderall. It could be something else that he's crushing up and snorting. So on the speed front, I think that one's like proven. All right, I got more for you. So a lot of these stories line up, dude. A lot of these stories line up from these different people who worked on The Apprentice or were around him.
The diapers is not a joke. It depends. You know, Diaper Don is trending, but it's based in reality. He would often soil himself on The Apprentice set. He's incontinent from all the speed, all the Adderall he does, the cocaine that he's done for decades. You know, all that stuff has a laxative, and it has an effect on your bowels, and his are uncontrollable. He's worn diapers since probably the 90s, but I saw it firsthand in the 2000s on Celebrity Apprentice in late 2000s, and we'd have to stop the show and change him, you know, and that was Keith Schiller's job. He would take him off set. He would wipe him down. Our nickname for Keith was Wet Wipes. It's not a joke. It's happened several times. And you've seen it happen while he's in office. You've seen he was in the Oval Office with Erdogan, and you could clearly hear him sort of evacuating himself. He did it in front of Senator Feinstein, Dianne Feinstein, at a press conference. So he does it, and he almost sits there like an unaware of it, you know. And I, one time I saw Ivanka have to go kind of whisper in his ear, and then Keith came and took him off stage. He'll also do it in a rage, and this is where it gets really drug related. He'll start to freak out. You know, one time there was the word arbitrage on a cue card, and he started screaming that the, you know, the script department was setting him up. You're setting me up. And he just freaked out and then very loudly evacuated his bowels, and you could smell it, you know, and the guy who was holding the boom bike mic, you know, was tearing up. So that's where the nickname, the S-H-I-T show, came from. That was the crew nickname for Celebrity Apprentice. So when you hear Diaper Don, it's not a joke. He tries to hide it. I'll give you one more fact. If you look up the video of him when he was doing the WWF thing, he tackles a guy on the ground outside of the ring, and you can clearly see the outline of the Depends in his pants. And that was back in the early 90s. So he's lost control of his bowels. He's lost control of his brain. That's who he is, Diaper Don.
Still not done. Got another one for you.
So, you know, when you post something and then someone bigger than you, like Adam Kinzinger, Bob Woodward, or that Nestor guy, confirm it. And years ago, I posted about Trump being kicked out of Keene Steakhouse in Manhattan, where I was eating with my father in 1983, because his smell was so offensive. This wasn't an elderly thing. It was 1983. I wouldn't make fun of Trump today if it was an elderly thing. That's not what we do on the left. It happens to elderly people. Trump wasn't elderly. We didn't complain. The table next to him complained, and the table behind him complained. We smelled it, but my father and I didn't complain about it. Trump was not elderly. The smell was so fucking offensive that they finally had to ask him to leave, and he did leave quietly right by us, and it wafted us.
They reference a moment there with Feinstein talking about gun control, where it happens. We got that right here.
So today we're here in a bipartisan fashion to show leadership in an effort to end this senseless violence. It can be ended. So today we're here in a bipartisan fashion to show leadership in an effort to end this senseless violence.
So look, I mean, they're saying now that it was just, he was falling asleep when he was farting in court. Homie may have let off a shart, bro. He may have sharted himself. Now, finally, I give you all that to give you this. We have Snopes weighed in on it. No evidence Trump passed gas in courtroom during hush money trial. And so they go on here to say, they don't say it's false. They say it's unproven. During former President Donald Trump's April 2024 hush money trial in New York City, he passed gas repeatedly while his lawyer struggled with the smell. On April 15th, the first day of the trial, they reported he fell asleep. The news went viral immediately. Days later, a new unconfirmed rumor joined the media circus. The former president had been rather flatulent. The claim appeared on April 19th, 2024, in a clip posted to X by ASIN, we follow him, of an interview on the Midas Touch Network. And so that's what we just showed you right there. But again, they go on to say, like, Well, George Conway weighs in, but he's one of the Lincoln Project guys. So that, again, you got to take that with a grain of salt, too. I heard this, too. I'm not kidding. The court's going to have to issue more than a gag order here. So when they traced it back, this is all they could find is those two talking about it. But those people say we have sources inside the courtroom. So really, I mean, you got to try to get somebody in the courtroom who's like, yeah, I fucking heard that shit. I smelled that shit or whatever. That's basically the move. Now, they weren't able to talk to anybody in the courtroom, but they're just showing you where this originated from the Midas Touch people, which we already showed you. And again, they don't say it's false. They just say it's unproven. So, like, almost like, we need to do a little more research. We need to talk to a few more people before we can say this conclusively. I don't know, man. Look, I think that if it was as clear as homie's making it out to be, then you would have had Maggie Haberman or somebody else who was in the courtroom be like, yeah, that shit is true. Like, they would have reported that, right? So, very possibly could be a rumor. As you guys know, we covered the Diaper Don thing in the past, and my take on it was, I'm kind of skeptical, just because they would have had me almost completely, except for the part where they talk about how somebody's job was to wipe him down afterwards. It's like, Trump's a grown-ass man. There's no grown-ass man gonna have another man wipe his ass for him or something when he's fully capable of wiping his own ass, right? Why would you? This person's job is to wipe his ass. Like, what are you talking about? If you're a grown man and you're sharting on yourself, you're gonna go to extreme lengths to hide that. You're not gonna have somebody like, yeah, Dave's job is to wipe my ass when I shit myself. That's not a thing, right? So if they didn't have that part in there, I would have been like, oh, true as fuck. Instead, I've now downgraded my perspective to just agnostic. I don't know. But I'm curious what you guys think. On the one hand, it kind of sounds fantastical, so maybe that's evidence or reason to believe it is fantastical. But on the other hand, I don't know, man, there sure is a lot of chatter over a very extended period of time, and there's an old saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. Or when there's farts, they're shitting. I don't know, man. Y'all tell me, but this one's not... This whole line of argument against Trump is not going away. If anything, it's getting stronger. Not just the falling asleep thing, but farting on himself, shitting himself, or whatever. You tell me, true or false. All right, guys. So there was a big story that came out the other day. During the Trump trial, somebody set himself on fire outside of it. Now, look, when I first heard this story, obviously the place where my mind went was, oh my God, that's like a hardcore MAGA guy who's self-immolating in defense of Trump. That was where my mind went. But we didn't have any proof of that at the time, right? We've since learned more about who this guy is, and he's actually not a hardcore MAGA guy. So let's watch. This happened live on CNN. Let's watch, and then I'll give you more information about the guy. Here we go.
What do you say? We also are seeing an active shooter. An active shooter is in the park outside the court. We have a man who is, he has set fire to him.
So the active shooter thing is not true. I don't know if somebody said that in her ear or whatever, but that was the assumption at first. I guess maybe people running away. She's, oh my God, active shooter. No active shooter, but he did set himself on fire.
A man has emblazoned himself outside of the courthouse just now. Our cameras are turning right now. A man has now lit himself on fire outside of the courthouse in Manhattan, where we are waiting for history to be made. A full jury panel is gone. We are watching a man who is fully emblazoned in the front of the courthouse today. We are watching multiple fires breaking out around his body and person. We have seen an arm that has been visible that has been engulfed in total flames. There is chaos that is happening. People are wondering right now if people are in danger. I'm looking across the courtyard. There is a man racing to his aid. There is coats coming off. Try to put out the fire. We have members of security details. NYPD is rushing to the scene. They are trying to come out. Officers are on the scene. A fire extinguisher is right now present being put on this man to try to put out. People are climbing over barricades to try to separate the public to put out the flame on this man. He has lit himself out in fire in front of the courthouse right now. We are watching as they're playing. We can smell the air. I can smell the burning of some sort of a flesh. I can smell the burning of some sort of agent being used as well as an accelerant to put that fire. I smell an actual fire extinguisher having been displayed. I see a person whose body appears to be on the ground being surrounded by officers. I have multiple officers. I count about a dozen officers on the scene. Burning. The fire is still burning. It's now in multiple locations. It continues to blaze. We right now have officers removing their coats, trying to surround this person to envelop their body to prevent them from further going into flames. You can smell, I'm sitting here with Evan Perez, you can smell burning flesh. You can smell an accelerant. The flames are continuing to engulf his person. I hear shouts that are coming from across the courtyard. I have people, multiple people running over. Another fire extinguisher being brought out. This person's body continues to be engulfed in flames. A portion of his body is still engulfed in flames.
So look, he went on to die. He went on to die. Recently, we had the story of the young Air Force member who lit himself on fire. I believe it was in front of the White House, or was it in front of the Israeli embassy? I think it was the Israeli embassy. Lit himself on fire because of the genocide in Gaza. And he was active duty Air Force, and he felt compelled morally to do an extreme protest and express solidarity with the people of Palestine. In this instance, it is not something like that. It's not like, hey, let's stop the genocide. And it's not even, hey, Trump is innocent. Which, again, I assume that's got to be what this is. That was my first thought. Turns out, no. So the guy left some pamphlets laying around, which explains like why he's doing it and what his ideology is. And he is, it's actually kind of interesting that he's a conspiracy theorist, but he's not right wing and he's not left wing. It's just like general conspiracy theory stuff. As much as conspiracy can be like apolitical or like bipartisan, like that's kind of what he is. So let me give you some more specifics. The guy's name is Max Azzarello. Apparently his mom died 2 years ago, and that really, really sent him into a tailspin. That's the information we were able to get after people did some digging on him. Max Azzarello, 37 years old, who died after setting himself on fire outside the Manhattan courthouse where Trump is on trial, had recently started posting anti-establishment conspiracy theories online, including a lengthy article on Substack, which blasted politicians and billionaires and even made reference to The Simpsons. The manifesto-style document warned of an impending apocalyptic fascist world coup. At 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, April 19th, he entered a park outside the New York courthouse where Donald Trump's historic criminal trial is taking place and set himself on fire. The horrific incident lasted several minutes before they were able to put it out. Police told NBC News that he was declared dead by the hospital after he was admitted with severe burn injuries. No time of death was given by the police. His friends described him as gentle and a very personable man. Some struggled to see how his final act was committed by the person they once knew so well, while others noted how his mother's death had seemed to leave an indelible mark, driving him to support conspiracy theories and go a little haywire. So in his lengthy post, Azzarello described himself as an investigative researcher. Police said that his driver's license showed he was born in 1987 and was a native of St. Augustine, Florida. A registered Democrat, that's interesting, he attended the University of North Carolina from 2005 to 2009, according to public records and his LinkedIn page. He then obtained his master's degree in city and regional planning in 2012 from Rutgers. Those close to Azzarello described him as kind, creative, and well-informed, albeit concerned about the world. Steve Waldman, Azzarello's friend from high school, described him to the New York Times as one of the most intelligent people he knew. While at Rutgers, Katie Brennan, a former classmate, recalled him dotting hallways with encouraging post-it notes for his classmates and singing karaoke versions of Frank Sinatra and Disney songs. Quote, he was super curious about social justice and the way things could be, Ms. Brennan said. He was creative and adventurous. By 2013, Azzarello worked as operations director for the campaign of Tom Suozzi. His LinkedIn profile reveals the new congressman was at the time running for Nassau County executive. Since then, he worked in marketing, sales, technology roles, some of which were based in Philadelphia. Years later, Azzarello moved to Florida. His social media indicates working as a self-employed research investigator, consistent with his online post. But at some point this month, between April 13th and April 19th, seemingly unbeknownst to his family, he arrived in New York City. The April dates fall almost exactly 2 years after his mom died. That's when everything changed for Azzarello, his friend says. That was around the time when he became more outspoken, Mr. Waldman told the Times. They were close and they had a good relationship. He was heartbroken. Some told the Daily Beast that he had gone a little haywire as of late, pointing to concerning social media posts. In June of 2023, he reportedly tagged Ms. Brennan and others in what she called a manifesto that he had penned. Alarmed by his writing, she called him immediately and eventually alerted one of his family members. By August, the Times wrote, he posted on Facebook about visiting a mental health facility, quote, 3 days in the psych ward, and all I got were my new favorite socks. so he had to go to a mental health facility at some point. In the following days, he displayed a series of unstable episodes. He had dinner at St. Augustine's Casa Monica Hotel, where he apparently found a years-old autograph left on the wall by former President Bill Clinton. Azzarello threw a glass of wine at it, according to police. Although he admitted to police what had happened, and they apparently dismissed it as a one-off incident, days later, he returned to the hotel, clothed in only underwear, and stood outside yelling in a bullhorn, the outlet wrote. So he's at a restaurant, throws a wine glass at an autograph of Bill Clinton on the wall, apparently doesn't, you know, gets off for that, shows up days later in his underwear with a bullhorn, yelling at people outside of the restaurant. Okay, that's not good. A few days later, he vandalized the outside of the United Way office and then entered a stranger's truck. Despite his multiple arrests in Florida, Azzarello did not have a criminal history in New York, police said. His former landlord, Larry Altman, told the Daily Beast, Azzarello was a very personable guy, but over the last few years, he had become more and more involved with the thought process that everything is a conspiracy against the common person. Mr. Altman also told the Times that Azzarello had political views that I would not consider mainstream. He called our government and the world government a Ponzi scheme. The police involved episodes of recent years and inclination toward conspiracy theories set the scene for Friday's act in New York City. He had apparently been spotted outside the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse on Thursday and Friday. Those who knew him previously didn't see the act outside the courthouse as consistent with Max Azzarello they once knew. Azzarello has a long history of posting conspiracy theories and rallying against the rich and powerful, according to NYPD officials who had begun to comb through his social media profiles. His lengthy Substack post called out a string of people, social media companies, and institutions. He also labeled the COVID-19 pandemic as an economic doomsday device. So as you can see, he's sort of all over the place. In the document, Azzarello said that the act of self-immolation was an extreme act of protest. To my friends and family, witnesses, and first responders, I deeply apologize for inflicting this pain upon you. Elsewhere in the lengthy post, Azzarello also referred to late pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, cryptocurrency, and episodes of The Simpsons. At one point, he compared himself to Lisa Simpson. Okay. The NYPD and Chief Detectives Joseph Kenny told reporters at a press conference, the pamphlets thrown by Mr. Azzarello seconds before the incident seemed to be propaganda-based, almost like a conspiracy theory type of pamphlets. Okay, so now I have a video of him here for you. Let's try to see, to the extent we can determine a coherent ideology, let's try to do that.
Hey, want to learn the biggest secret in the world? In March 2023, sketchy billionaire Peter Thiel started a bank run. I did 1,500 hours. The research, and I learned all their rotten secrets. The big one is the cryptocurrency is history's first planetary multi-trillion dollar Ponzi scheme. That's an economic doomsday device. And when that Ponzi goes insolvent, as all Ponzis must, we'll get the worst economic collapse in world history. And every powerful person you can think of is in on it. Want to know why everything gets worse and more expensive? That's because we live in a secret kleptocracy. That's when the government gets taken over by con artists whose only job is to steal from the public. And I hope you know this is wonderful news, because now that the public knows about the secret kleptocracy, they get to abolish their criminal government. Follow for more.
Again, it's so all over the place, because he's talking about abolishing the government, right? Which is like, okay, that's kind of super extreme. But he's also talking about we live in a kleptocracy. That part's true. That part's definitely true. But then he has like crypto at the heart of a global conspiracy. Like crypto is definitely a scam, but it's not the heart of a global conspiracy, right? So, and then again, he's got issues with, like, there's Democratic politicians he has an issue with, but there's also billionaires he has an issue with. And like, it's sort of like a grab bag of all different types of corruption or all different types of conspiracies. Parts of it being true, and then other parts of it being bizarre and untrue.
Start a fucking revolution. Start a fucking revolution. Start a fucking revolution. You've got nothing to lose.
So look, after evaluating all of the stuff, my takeaway is not going to be particularly controversial or revolutionary here, but definitely had some deep psychological problems, right? If he was on Lexapro or Thorazine or whatever appropriate medication for whatever his specific mental health condition is, he could have probably been a relatively normal guy and wouldn't have done anything this extreme. But it seems like he was sort of led by his psychological illness, and look how it ended up, right? Look, that's not to say, we talked about this previously, that's not to say that everybody who doesn't act like this falls into that category, because I don't think that's true. You know, if there's been people historically who do it to protest war. We just talked about the active duty Air Force member who did that recently to try to stop the Gaza genocide. I do think there are instances of like if somebody did that to protest Adolf Hitler during the height of his atrocities, it's kind of hard to be like, well, you're the crazy one. Or it could genuinely be like a super courageous and brave act of the most extreme form of protest, right? There are instances where it's more plausible and reasonable. It's not to say anybody should do it, because care about your health, right? Protect yourself. But there's instances where it's not this. But in this case, you look at it, you put it all together, and it's just, homie needed medication. Homie needed therapy, right? The fact that when his mom died is the thing that sort of sent him down this rabbit hole. And look, I think it's understandable to have a degree of sympathy, because this isn't like somebody who's a mass shooter who has psychological problems and conspiracies, and then they start gunning down innocent people. He just took his own life, right? And so it's okay to feel bad, but fact of the matter is, I think he needed medication. He needed a support system. He needed a therapist. And but the political aspect of the stuff he talked about, I don't know. I found it particularly interesting, because usually in these scenarios, you'll have somebody who's very extremely on the right or the left, or like part of a religious extremist group. It'll be very like doctrinaire in that respect. This guy's not doctrinaire at all. He's got little bit of grab back from over here and over there and over there and over there. You know, little bits of it are true, but it's also still in a broader context of him not fully getting it right or understanding it. Yeah, I don't know, man. Just a sad story. And he picked the Trump trial not because of Trump, but because it would just get a lot of eyeballs on him. But obviously my first thought was, this is a MAGA guy who's trying to defend Trump. Wasn't that. Just a garden variety, all over the place, conspiracy theorists dealing with some serious psychological issues. All right, so Bill Maher has very clearly, at some point within the past year or two, he's made a decision that, you know, I'm gonna flirt more with the right, and I'm gonna like call out the left more. It's very clearly like tactical, strategic. At some point, he flipped a switch and he said, this is gonna be my new lane. Look, he's gotten a lot of pats on the back from Fox News and right wingers when he deviates from generally leftish positions, and so he's leaning into it, right? And last week we covered, some Republican brainworm type new rules segment that he did. You can go check out that segment. Well, we have another one for you here. And this one, man, he is jumping the shark and shit in the bed. So I'm not kidding. This whole new rules thing is like DeSantis is right segment mixed with like a weird implication that the left is okay with pedophilia. All right, let's break it down.
And finally, new rule. As one of the few people in the public eye who's gone through life and never had kids, someone has to tell me, why am I always having to defend them? I don't even like kids. But I also think it's every adult's job to protect them. Have you all been watching the Max documentary called Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV?
By the way, check that out. It's actually really crazy. A lot of the shows I loved as a kid, like All That, the stuff that was going on behind the scenes, woo, super duper disturbing, super disturbing.
OMG. Nickelodeon, it wasn't a studio, it was Neverland Ranch with Craft Services. It is just scene after scene, clip after clip, of the child stars of their day being subjected to obviously inappropriate, highly sexualized degradation, and quite a few pickles going through glory holes. I was grossed out, and I've gone camping with John Waters. I kid you, John, I love you. So I don't know if this documentary is the talk of your town, but it is out here because it didn't just expose a dangerous workplace. It also exposed hypocrisy. Because it must be pointed out that when the evil governor of Florida was saying the exact same thing about kids and creepy stuff at Disney that liberals now find intolerable at Nickelodeon, he was dismissed as a hick and a bigot. But why would a kids' content factory like Disney be all that different than the one at Nickelodeon? A 2014 CNN report discovered that at least 35 Disney employees had been arrested for sex crimes against children. And in 2021, Disney child star Allison Stoner confessed she only narrowly survived the toddler to train wreck pipeline. The next year, child star Cole Sprouse told the New York Times that young actresses at the Disney Channel were heavily sexualized from an early age. You know, Willie Sutton said he robbed banks because that's where the money is. And the reason we find pedophiles in the Boy Scouts and the rectory and kids' TV is that's where the kids are.
What does this have to do with DeSantis being right and the left being wrong? There's no connection there. I don't even know what connection he's trying to make.
DeSantis wasn't wrong, but we're so tribal now. The left will overlook child fucking if the guy from the wrong party calls it out.
That is legitimately one of the most insane things I've ever heard Bill Maher say. In what way, shape, or form is the left saying we're okay with child fucking? Or we're willing to overlook that? He's making up that DeSantis's issue with Disney was like sexual assault and rape and things of that nature by the employees who work there, or the bosses against the younger employees. He's making that up. The issue DeSantis has with Disney is that there's, like, gay characters in the new Disney movies. That's his issue with Disney. That's what the left is objecting to. This idea that, like, if you have a gay character as a main character in a Disney movie, that's a bad thing. That is not a bad thing. That is totally fine. Jesus Christ, Bill.
Messed up Amanda Bynes, but the Mickey Mouse Club was where Britney Spears got her start, and she's perfectly fine. And get this, after Brian Peck, who was one of the lead creeps at Nickelodeon, served 16 months in prison for the molesting he did there, Disney hired him.
Yeah, and how the fuck is that the left's fault? How is that the left's fault? That has nothing to do with the left at all. That has nothing to do with the right at all. You have this pedophile who worked at Nickelodeon, you know, because pedophiles are going to try to gravitate to wherever there's kids, where they feel like they could take advantage of them. It's actually a very serious problem, right? But then he went to prison for pedophilia stuff. By the way, it was the kid from Drake and Josh who he did it with. This is all in Quiet on Set. You have to watch that. And then he gets hired by Disney, which is fucking insane. But you blame Disney for that. You blame, you know, whoever's at the top of Disney, whoever's making those decisions at Disney. You blame, I don't know, maybe they thought, well, this guy ran a show that was very successful at Nickelodeon with all that, or this show or that show, and so he clearly knows what he's doing, so let's hire him because we think he'll ultimately be able to make us money and we'll overlook the whole pedophile child fucker thing. It has nothing to do. You can make more of an argument to blame capitalism and the profit motive than you can to blame the left.
For pedophiles in Hollywood, it's a small world after all. And not just Hollywood. There are Instagram moms these days who are practically only fansing their itty-bitty beauty queen daughters by having them wear skimpy bikinis and eat bananas to build social media stardom. They're called sharenters, a hybrid of sharing and parent. I call them pimps, a hybrid of pimp and s.
That has nothing to do with the left. Again, you're attacking the left for what reason? For what reason? By the way, culturally, historically, the idea of the young, beauty pageant participants, the child beauty pageant participants, that comes from more conservative Republican areas. Oh, Bill.
And people who believe in social justice have agreed this is wrong and this is bad, and exposing kids to an adult world of lurid costumes and garish makeup borders on abuse. Now hurry up and get in the car. We're late for Drag Queen Story Hour.
Oh, my God. The fact that he made a seamless transition from talking about a literal convicted pedophile who got hired for a children's show The fact that he seamlessly linked that to Drag Queen Story Hour, that's a problem with you, Bill Maher. That's a problem with you. The fact that you think those things are connected or related in any way, shape, or form. Jesus Christ. Here, I'll make this as simple as possible. The left is okay with Drag Queen Story Hour. The left is okay with gay characters in movies and cartoons. The left is okay with all those things. The left is against convicted pedophiles working on children's shows. But what does he do? Blurs the lines, meshes the two things together, and says, these things are similar, and the left is okay with that, so they're giving a pass to pedophiles on children's shows. This is so fucking dishonest.
Not that there's anything wrong with being a drag queen, but maybe it's time to admit that sometimes Drag Queen Story Hour is more for the queen than the kids. Sure, kids love a clown, but does the clown have to have tits? And when I see a five-year-old tipping at a bar under a sign that says it's not going to lick itself, do I have to pretend that's cool in order to keep my liberal ID card?
No, you don't. I don't think that's cool. The parent shouldn't have brought the kid there. End of discussion. End of conversation. What are we doing here? Okay, here's what pisses me off about what Bill Maher is doing these days. He is 2 or 3 years behind the internet trends. And so just recently he's come to the whole, like, let's talk about wokeness. Let me say I'm a liberal, but have nearly every fucking new rule segment I do this day talk about how, man, aren't the right wingers right about this thing and that thing? And aren't the lefties idiots and wrong about that? Like, this is so tired and so stale, and 1,000 people have done it before you. Me, I'm a classic liberal. But, you know, these lefties sure are insane and going too far on these things. Proceeds to straw man said lefties. Like, we get it. You got some positive reinforcement when you said some conservative things. Now you're leaning into it. You can stop acting like this is fucking iconoclastic or revolutionary and like, I'm the sole voice of reason on the left. You're not. You're not that.
If you want kids to be more tolerant, why not have handicapped people read them stories? Kids are more likely to encounter disabled people than drag queens in life.
I see no problem with Drag Queen Story Hour, and I see no problem with that. I see no problem with that. In fact, I think that's a good idea. Yeah, let's have disabled people read stories to kids. Wonderful. Again, where's the beef?
Just go back to the good old days when kids were read simple stories with simple morals, like, if you're a lonely single man, just make a boy out of wood. I've said it before, wokeness is not an extension of liberalism anymore. It's more often taking something so far that it becomes the opposite. Teaching kids not to hate or judge those who are different, great, proud we got there, all for that. But at a certain point, inclusion becomes promotion. And contrary to current progressive dogma, children aren't miniature adults wise beyond their years, they're morons.
He said, inclusion becomes promotion. And you don't want to promote these things. So why don't you stop playing coy and just say, I guess I'm against the inclusion thing, right? I guess, look, the whole premise of this entire new rule segment is to say the left is dumb for not giving DeSantis credit where it's due. And the left is effectively defending quiet onset and this pedophile who worked for Nickelodeon being hired by Disney. This is effectively the argument. That is total fucking horseshit. Every lefty I know was horrified by Quiet on Set. Every single lefty I know felt that way about it and was against that guy Brian Peck being hired. Probably think he should still be in prison, right? You can believe all of those things and also correctly acknowledge that this was not what DeSantis was calling out. DeSantis wasn't going on a moral crusade against pedophiles. DeSantis was making a big stink about there's some characters in Disney movies that are gay and he's against that. Okay, well, DeSantis is wrong about that. He's wrong about that. Guys, DeSantis, the Stop Woke Act, a lot of that got slapped down because it was fucking flat out unconstitutional. the don't say gay bill. Well, the way that was enforced, you couldn't even have a gay teacher put a picture on their desk of them and their spouse, because then that might lead to questions by the kids. And they don't want to allow that, so you're not allowed to put the picture up. This is what the left was saying, hey, DeSantis, you're wrong about this. This is what the point was. The point was not, DeSantis, you're wrong about this, and now we are going to end up defending pedophiles working at Nickelodeon? Like, okay. It's so fucking try hard for Bill Maher. He's bending over backwards. He's doing mental gymnastics to try to attack the left and say they're super unreasonable, but I'm the lone voice of reason that's willing to say Ron DeSantis is right. Oh my God. So I don't know how many more of these Bill Maher segments I could do, man. It's just so tired. It's so stale. And so we've seen this. This is the Rubin pipeline. How many times have we seen this? I'm a liberal, but I'm the last reasonable liberal left, and I think the left is wrong about all these things. And now I will proceed to strawman the left. Give it a rest, Bill, please. All right, guys, that's the show. Love y'all very much. Everybody do me a favor, please drop a like, drop a subscription, leave a comment, all that fun stuff. Click that bell icon so you get a notification every single time a video drops. Thank you for everybody who supports the show on Patreon or tips with the thanks button on YouTube. Without you guys, we couldn't do the show. I've never talked to an advertiser ever. You guys helped build the show from the ground up. Couldn't do it without you. All right, guys. I'll talk to all you guys tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day. Much love.